Women in photography taking over from the men. Who have we got?
Today we have in the studio with us Catherine Vanella and Sean McDonald. I hope I said that right, Catherine. But
Vanella is good.
Oh, sorry. now you're here to talk, photography, I suppose, in general. But we really want to have a bit of a chat about, besides what you're doing at the moment, I think we'd like to just go back a little bit and find out how you got started in photography and where your interest in, I think, photography especially came about. So maybe we can start with you, Catherine.
Well, probably when I was a kid, and my dad was always carrying a camera, so I kind of picked up a film camera from him when I was young.
Wow. Well, that's good, because a lot of kids normally think, oh, dad's doing it, I'm not going to do it. But you were interested, were you?
Yeah, and I mean, his father was the same. I think his father takes video of everything that he walks past, so it just kind of was there. And, you know, the family loved having their photo taken, so when I kind of hit high school, I carried it on and started in the darkroom in year 8 and just went from there and just kept going. Found that there was a university dedicated to photography and went from there. So now I run a studio. So I run the photography studies studio in South Bank, which is really cool. So I'm still amongst it. I get to play with absolutely amazing equipment every single day, which is probably the best part. It's like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, I think, where it stem from.
I think you've left a lot of bits.
I went from the start to the finish.
Yeah. But we'll get to that because you collaborate with Sean here. But I just want to actually talk about what you're doing now. How has the a photographer's life changed since you were a little kid, or since your grandfather, for instance, how much it's changed? Because I can remember going in, like learning photography, and I failed badly because you had to mix all the chemicals and whatever, and it was really hard and involved, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely was. It was definitely a slower process. Now it's click and see. It's milliseconds in order to see what you're doing, so it's very fast paced now, so you're on your toes more so than waiting 45 minutes for something to develop and actually see if anything is right. Now it's click, look down, and you kind of have it from there.
And because also, like there were the film, there was only say 24 exposures on film. And so if you messed up, you didn't capture the, and especially, your partner in crime here, who we're going to speak to in a minute, does wedding photos. I wonder if he's ever had a wedding that, have you ever had that happen?
I wouldn't have survived in the film world for sure.
And it must be changing the developments that are coming forward to you, it must be so exciting in photography right now.
Yeah, everything's moving. I mean, now cameras don't even have mirrors. It's all mirrorless. So things are getting lighter, things are getting smaller. So they're kind of also reverting back to going basic. So your street photography stuff is quite small, so you're not out. Not like everyone can't see this giant lens happening now. Everyone's kind of reverting back to how it was, and the cameras are becoming back to the size of film cameras.
Yeah.
So does that then affect the sort of the photos you take or what, how you go about things? I mean, because I suppose if you're going to take a photo, whether you have a big camera or small camera, does that have an impact on?
Definitely think so, because people see it. So if you're going for, a lot of street stuff, you kind of want to be a fly on the wall.
Oh, okay.
You don't want people to know. There can be occasions where you do want people to have a reaction. So, bigger, better, I guess. But a lot of the time you kind of want to sneak around and just kind of take shots of what you're observing without you interfering with what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I am finding though, when you mentioned that the cameras are getting bigger again, and they are, I'm noticing it, that everyone's walking around with quite a big camera around their neck now. It's very noticeable. So and has that had a lot of effect because of the phones, like your phone or the camera there, which is my lifeline to photography? I don't have a normal camera, and I should, and I wish I did, but I don't. I'm thinking, that people like myself that need to move to the bigger, better cameras. Is that happening?
Well, I think there's so many platforms now where photography can be shared. So, Instagram is probably one of the biggest apps around. you don't need a high quality image in order to put it up there. So that's where phones come in handy. Some people don't want to move to a larger camera or kind of be, I guess you can kind of get distracted with all the things a camera can do sometimes as well. So having a point and shoot like your phone can be absolutely perfect. Yeah.
But my only downside of it is that the zoom isn't as powerful as you'd want, and it becomes grainy, and I'm finding more and more that I am zooming, because incredible sunsets that are happening, or sunrise this morning outside my bedroom window, I took one. So you want to capture it, and your phone won't give you that quality anymore.
Yeah, definitely it won't. So I guess it's, you choose the equipment that's best for you. So
it's
a constant struggle, because you're constantly,
especially traveling.
Yeah, everything's constantly moving forward, and you want to do so many different things. So you want to shoot street stuff where you don't want to be noticed, but then you do want that larger lens.
Yep.
Just say like when you are at a wedding.
Yep.
And you need to be noticed.
Yep.
So it's such. I guess it's each to their own, and it's also really depending on what you're doing. It's such a broad spectrum of what you can do with photography, how you do it. Where you want to put it as well. So, you then revert to going in a studio. Everyone knows you're there. It doesn't matter what camera you have. You know, it is about you and the camera. So there's no difference in if it's massive, it's small, if it's,
Sean.
Yes.
You were on the show before, about a year and a half ago.
Yes, correct.
You were part of an exhibition. What was it called? I've forgotten. Do you remember?
Oh, God, you're testing my memory.
Yeah. But what it was a collection of not just photography. It was all forms of visual art, wasn't it?
It was. And there was about, I think, 30-odd people involved. It was quite a broad spectrum that at the time my former college, PSC, was involved with. So I was one of their sort of representatives in that group. But that was a great one. It had a lot of variety in it, which is always interesting.
Yeah. So give us a bit of a catch up, because a lot of people wouldn't have heard that show or forgot. Well, we can't even remember the exhibition that you were in for, and you can't even remember it. So, our luck.
Yeah.
Give us your background and how you met.
Yeah. So my background's fairly different to Kat's. We're opposites in a lot of ways when it comes to photography.
Which is probably good in a way.
It's great because we sort of see things differently, particularly from a technical point of view. She's very much your film girl, developed in that film world, whereas I'm a digital boy through and through.
Okay.
And we'll go do a job and, be shooting a portrait, and I'll walk away with it like 1,000 shots and she'll have 10. They're all good, but like I've shot, 100 times more frames than she has. So we complement each other well that way. But I, again, different to Kat, where she knew sort of straight away what she wanted to do. I sort of failed at a lot of creative fields, drumming, drawing, all those kind of things, constantly searching for things. I fell into a marketing sort of course. And then it was not till, my early 20s that I sort of picked up a camera for the first time. Fell in love with it straight away and ended up sort of studying nighttime while doing my marketing job that I had at the time. And then sort of just went from strength to strength and eventually thought, this is the life I want to lead. So made the jump. But it took me a lot longer to figure out where to go with it.
And how did you meet each other?
So I was just finishing my studies at PSC, which is a college in South Bank for photography. And right at the end of my course, one of my last classes, Kat had just started like assisting in the studio, working there, and she was just very impressed by my skill set, I like to say. The truth is, barely even noticed me, but I noticed her. And not long after graduating, and we sort of shared common interest at exhibitions we went to, in deciding which images we liked and didn't like, and she sort of was instantly just madly in love with me from there.
I wasn't the fact that you fell for the teacher, Sean.
Look, that's my story. I'm going to stick to it.
Right. Now you're collaborating a fair bit. You've bought in two books today. One is on my favourite city for photography, apart from Melbourne, is what city?
New York.
And we spoke about that last time you were on.
We did.
How hard was it to put this book together, which it's very easy seeing it's New York, but how hard to pick the final cut?
Incredibly hard. I mean, we would spend nights. We had pictures all over our wall. Trying to, it was the first book we'd done, so we were sort of learning on the fly how to structure it and put something together like that. It's one thing just to post a picture on Instagram. To put a, you know, 100 into a book is it requires a lot more decision making. So you know, we'd spend nights just getting frustrated with each other and the process, laying things out on walls.
Firstly, getting to that 100 was
well, that's another thing.
That was another thing. Because as he said, he is a digi boy through
and through. I was going to say, he would have taken thousands.
We initially started with, I think he started with 500 images and I brought in 100. And he's like, I thought you were meant to cull. I'm like, I did, 100. I'm like, what were you doing?
You're better at that.
So, like he said, the walls were absolutely covered. We're visual people, so having it in front of us constantly is what we
being able to move things around and find connections amongst images, particularly with something like New York, where there's a lot of sort of quirk and subtleties going on in the background of images, finding little links that maybe aren't obvious until you sort of look at them, or maybe it's just, you know, one person's got the same facial expression as the person in the background of that one, or, you know, there's a small little pop of colour that relates. So finding those little sort of quirks, I guess, that we can link up and add, you know, strength through combining the images as well as on their own.
Has there been images that you didn't use that you, and now all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't use that one?
Totally.
Well, actually, a day before we were printing the New York book, Sean saw one of my photos that I had said no to, and it's like one of his favourites, and it was one that sold as well, and I was like, huh. Didn't see that coming.
Well, in our most recent book, which I'm sure we'll talk about, there was a book we did an image we didn't even put in the book, but for some reason we chose to print it at the exhibition launch we had, and that sold like one of the best sellers.
Yeah.
Said afterwards, why the hell didn't we put this in the book? It seems so obvious now, but like yeah, I think whenever there's time between looking at images, you sort of change the way you look at them. Even now, I look back and change the ones that I like, I guess. Yeah, so.
Now, you had a real life-changing adventure. Yeah, like New York is life-changing in itself, but you've gone to the other extreme. Tell us about this other book.
Yeah, well, we just recently, at the end of May, launched a book called Education is Freedom, which it came about. So we travelled to rural Zimbabwe, about 6 hours out of the capital, which is Harare, and documented a school and a group of girls that go to school there. So I'll backtrack and say that we got involved. I met the founder of this. The charity that we sort of collaborated with on this project is called the Gomo Foundation.
How did you find them in the first place?
Yeah, so it's interesting, and I get asked that a lot by people that, particularly in the photography world, wanting to get involved in these kind of things. And we're at a stage in our sort of lives and career, I guess, where we were looking for a project that was a bit more meaningful and something that was more than just us travelling and taking photos of amazing places like New York, but it had some more substance to it. And at that time, I met the founder, who's Ragare Gomo, hence the Gomo Foundation. And we were just at an event, and he was telling me about what he does. And the charity focuses on giving girls an education that otherwise wouldn't have the chance to go to school, particularly secondary school.
Awesome.
So education's played a really big part in our lives in terms of allowing us to, you know, follow our dreams. So straight away, the actual subject matter of what he did struck a chord. And then secondly, they were a really young foundation. So they'd only been going for sort of 18 months at that stage, and a lot of that first, you know, 18 months is filled with getting all the regulations and all the ticks and, you know, things that you need to do to be a proper organisation. So their image database was really bare. Like, it was just the photos they'd taken on their own trips. Ragare, who is from Zimbabwe, you know, has been back there several times, and they were just photos that he had taken on his trip. So there was a really big opportunity where we could get involved with charity and actually make a difference, because there's a lot of charities out there that are well established and they've got big databases of images, and you're sort of just dropping some more images into the many that they've already got. So we saw a really great opportunity to work with these great people.
And to be on the ground floor with them as well.
Yeah, and just obviously have an amazing adventure. Like, we've done a lot of travel together, but, you know, in your typical sort of touristy locations predominantly. So this was definitely out of our comfort zone and would be an adventure. So, within a couple of weeks after meeting him, we caught up and then said, well, why don't we just go to Zimbabwe and we'll document it all for you, take some videos, take some photos, and hopefully that will help them back here telling the story of these young girls because, as they say, picture tells a thousand words.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kath, what was it like being in such a remote place that where you went, and how different was it from well, obviously very different from Melbourne?
It was definitely a culture shock in the surroundings. It was probably, I don't know if either of you have been towards Darwin Way or anything like that.
No, I
or the
I,
middle
no,
of the
I
territory.
Haven't.
So yeah. Just nothing. There's absolutely nothing. You're driving K's and K's just to kind of see another school or see another building. So in that regard, it was completely different. In the photography sense, it was probably the best situation we could be in because we lived a 5-minute walk from the school. So we were lucky that they had a house for us to stay in. So all you could focus on is this project. No phones worked, no internet, intermittent electricity. So, you know, we got to wake up every morning and just
shoot,
yeah. Which was awesome. Cause
and how did they react to you? What was their reaction?
Have you seen, like, when the Beatles go anywhere?
Came to Melbourne?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Wow.
Just a lot of these young sort of kids had never seen white people before. So, you know, we were like celebrity, which was something we weren't expecting. You know, we would walk and there'd be 100 kids following us and you'd wave to them and they'd all squeal. Like it was a mind-blowing
how,
you know,
how
reaction.
Interesting. And is there unrest in this part of the where
yeah,
you were?
So,
yes.
I mean, they've had a lot of challenges for a long time, Zimbabwe as a country. We arrived at a particularly troublesome time, which was more just bad luck. I think they'd announced some new laws that, you know, the locals weren't happy with. So getting to the schools was a big challenge. We had to drive through a lot of, you know, protests, and there was some riots on the streets, things like that. So, I mean, we were lucky.
Was that, a bit scary?
Yeah. I mean, the first day or so, it was quite exciting because, you know, well, this is then you realise, oh, actually, this is quite serious. It's no longer exciting, more a bit scary. And we were lucky to be going there with, like, members of the charity. So they had a ground team there that were driving us and that. So that helped a lot. If it was just us sort of on our own, it would have been a totally different experience. But, yeah, so getting through that was a fair challenge. But once we got out to the schools, because it's so remote, you're away from any of that kind of stuff, and it's literally just the school there, and that's it.
So you're there. You're taking photos. What was it life-changing for you? You know, like, did you walk away from it, or was there that moment where you were there thinking, you know, what a privilege, and also how different this is compared to my life back in Melbourne?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely humbling. Like, I think you kind of turn around and see how little they have, but they are the happiest people you will ever meet. And just speaking with them, I think we roughly focused on the girls that were 15 to 16 years of age, and what they wanted to do for their country and for women in general was absolutely amazing. Like, I would think if I were to speak to a general 14-year-old here or 15-year-old here, if you would even remotely get the same answer.
Yep.
You know, they're talking about changing how farming works in their country so they can, you know, grow their own foods again, and, you know, how they can get into politics, how they can be doctors. So, you know, they can make sure that those areas of their country are covered. It's absolutely amazing to hear from, you know, 15-year-olds.
Yeah. But it must be really hard for them as well, because their society wouldn't be very open to women.
No. Well, that's exactly right. And that's why the foundation focuses on women to get an education, because traditionally their society has said that women, when they're about 14 or 15, will get married. And once they're married, they're owned by that family. So investing in them to go to school when funds are really tight is a waste of money. So you would send your boy to school if you can afford anyone to go to school. So there's generations that have all been denied an education of women. And they're really conscious of changing that at the moment. And there's a lot of sort of charities like the GOMO Foundation that try to sort of write this and give more girls a chance, but there's still, as you said, an undercurrent of society that thinks it's still, you know, should be a boy focus.
Yeah, we'll come back and hear what happened when you got back to Australia with all these photos. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
And we're still talking to Kat and Sean in regards to the work that you guys have been working on, well, the book, basically, that you've been working on, and that's with the GOMO Foundation.
Yes.
Correct.
So, now, we were talking before about the access to education, I suppose, for girls, for women, and the fact that the opportunities are there now, and the GOMO Foundation is looking at trying to encourage that. Did you find that when you went there, you said you're dealing mostly with 15 and 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that they actually believe that, you know, that they have access to whatever they want to do? They have no limitations.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It was, I mean, we've spoken a few times about this trip, and that's always the main thing that we took away from the trip was, one, how passionate they were about going to school. And we talk about, you know, when we went to school at that age, and it was, you know, it was just another task that you do. It was not seen as something that you feel grateful about.
No, like, you hated school.
No, yeah, it was right, like just something that you had to do. Whereas these girls were so happy to be there and so grateful and felt so privileged that you couldn't help be inspired by that, because they were just 100% dedicated to making the most of that chance.
What did their parents think?
Yeah, so they all have different stories and backgrounds. Some are really lucky and have supportive parents, and some have more challenges and maybe even have an uncle or an auntie. There's a lot of sort of raising by village over there. So you get, you know, all different, you know, might be a grandparent or aunt. So some of the girls have a lot of challenges with parents and that whole relationship. And then at the same time, some have really great supportive parents that are, you know, are forward thinking and see the benefit of an education for a young girl.
So you came back with all these photos. So what did you decide to do with it? Did you already have the plan?
We already had the plan. When we met Ragare, the first time we met Ragare, we kind of left and we're like, all right, we're going to decide. We're going to go to Zimbabwe. And when, in order to do that, the reason for doing that is to give them imagery so they can at least help their foundation grow and they can show people what they're trying to do and not just kind of speak to them and hope for the best.
Yep.
And come back and put on, a fundraiser, so an exhibition, make the book so we could raise money. It was one of our big decisions is that we don't have a lot of skills in life, but one of our big skills is photography. So why don't we try and use that in the best way possible?
Yeah.
You know, try and use what we can do in the best way possible.
Sure.
To help them. And this is kind of what we came up with. So, yeah, in going in, we knew what we wanted to do.
And did they get involved in choosing the imagery for the book, or was it totally your choice?
Totally us.
Yeah, they were great. And we sort of said, like, we'll bring you the book. You help us put together the night, the exhibition type thing. And so we sort of, had full reign of putting that book together and really wanted to tell the story that we found as well, because we were the ones there and wanted to tell that story about what we saw as best we can. And not only what we saw, but we wanted to tell their story that we found. Like, when we were there, we ran a lot of classes and workshops with the girls each day.
Right.
Ran things like, you know, get in groups and tell us, you know, the five reasons you're proud to be an African woman, or tell us, write a story about, you know, who inspires you most in life or what you want to be when you grow up. And so we used a lot of that content into the book to sort of show their thoughts and their feelings and their hopes and all those kind of things. So it was really important that we sort of controlled the creative element of that. But they were fantastic support and anything we needed. And so we put the book together, which was a breeze. No, it was a challenge.
Lots of arguing.
I was going to say lots of arguing again and culling of photos. And
lots of late nights where we said, okay, let's leave it for tonight. We'll come back fresh tomorrow.
And so it was a book launch, but an exhibition as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't do things by halves, which is both a blessing and a curse. So we had the book launch. We had an exhibition where we hired sort of a big space in Collingwood, filled it with, I think we framed about 25 images and had about another 60 on the wall in different shapes and forms. We also took a lot of video over there while we were there. So we had multiple videos running on the night. We had an African drummer come down and get the party going with drumming and whatnot. So we had a lot going on that night. All designed around really creating a great sort of atmosphere and helping us tell the story of the girls.
And how did it go? Did you sell many of
the... Well, we were a bit worried. We managed to get, like, we were doing it midweek as our big launch, which is always, you know, a challenge. And we were in Collingwood and it was pouring rain that night. And I think an hour before opening, I turned and said, it's going to be just us and our parents, you know that. And so we were a little bit nervous. And but we had a great result. We had like over 400 people come down.
Wow.
We sold so much more. So many more prints than we anticipated, because it's always a challenge. Like we've done our New York exhibition before, and it's an easy sort of sell to have someone put a beautiful New York picture on their wall because everyone loves that. But it's a different ball game, I guess, when you've got some young African girls and that kind of thing. So we were a bit unsure about it. Would anyone want to buy that kind of imagery? Mm. But we were lucky. We sold lots of different stuff, all things we weren't expecting to sell. It was quite interesting, actually.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a great success. We raised sort of close to $15,000 for them.
Oh, which good on you.
They're obviously stoked about.
Yeah.
We were lucky that we had some sponsors help fund the night for us. So every dollar we raised that night went straight to the girls. So there was no sort of upfront cost that we had to cover. So. Yeah. That was really beneficial, and yeah, we're able to raise a good amount. It's going to really help change a few girls' lives.
Now, people can still buy the book.
They can. So yeah,
find out?
Yeah, so the GOMO Foundation website has a link where you can buy it, which is just GOMO, www.gomofoundation.org.au.
And that's GOMO.
Correct. Yes.
Foundation. Yep.
Yes. .org. So they can get on there.
Right, okay. And what about some of the images as well? Are you happy to, you know, like do more images if people would like to buy one of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So we haven't got them on the GOMO Foundation website yet,
right.
But they're on my website, and we're happy to print up anything that people like from the book if they want a print of that.
Right.
So
to contact you on your website?
Yeah. That's so,
and what's yours?
Mine's Sean, S-E-A-N, M-C-D, photography.com.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, if you Google Sean McDonald Photography, it'll come up.
It will come up, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got an exhibition coming up that, and Neil found this, and you weren't even aware that it was...
You almost forgot you had it, didn't you?
So we knew it was coming up. We didn't know there was things online about it. So
and what is it?
So it's called Unplanned. And it's part of the Ballarat Biennale Festival, part of their fringe festival they have there. So we have some good friends that are based up in Ballarat, the Bromleys, David and Yugi Bromley. So they're putting on an exhibition with us and two other photographers. And I guess we're still working through exactly what our sort of... But, I mean, the unplanned part came about because a lot of our favourite images and... Our favourite, I guess, photographic experiences come through unplanned experiences where we just sort of throw ourselves into something and hope for the best. So we're trying to bring the best of all those different experiences we've had and put them together into a sort of unplanned, planned kind of...
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And thank you for what you're doing with this organisation. It's wonderful what you're doing. But great experience along the way well. So,
definitely.
You know, like helping people but having a great experience for yourself. So what's your website again?
So my website is www.sean, spelled S-E-A-N, the Irish way, M-C-D, photography.com.
All right, brilliant. Thanks so much for coming in. Lovely to see you. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine.